The following film has been modified from its original version. It has been formatted to fit the screen, edited to run in the time allotted, and for content. Now, in a logo, a towering block of gold letters reads 20th Century Fox. Hollywood spotlights crisscross their shining skyward beams. More words appear. A News Corporation company. A blue light trails over a black background, tracing out a cursive R. Block letters spell out Regency. In a computer animation, five metallic strips bent into V shapes nest one inside the other as a bright blue spotlight shines behind them. Prismatic colors gleam on the chrome-like V shapes, Village Roadshow Pictures. Words appear. Regency Enterprises and Village Roadshow Pictures present, in association with NRV Entertainment, a Copelson Entertainment, New Regency, Further Films Production, a Gary Flader film. Michael Douglas is Dr. Nathan Conrad. Don't say a word. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Stacey Perlman, Dutch Priest, Justin Soule, Matthew Warren Lane, and Christopher Flowers. Read by Leilani Jones Wilmore. As a metro train passes by, words appear. Williamsburg, Brooklyn, November 1991. Under a stone building's clock, a sign reads, Williamsburg Bank of Commerce. In a van parked across the street, a narrow-eyed man adjusts his watch to match the time, 3:55.
Montana and Rice, they all came up, baby. But do they cover the spread?
Sitting at the wheel next to the first man, a short-haired driver presses buttons on a radio, then touches his own earpiece. In the back, a mustached black guy addresses a long-haired man and a fifth plain-faced man.
And don't even bring up Miami. Miami has nothing but Marina with a golden arm and some fat booty cheerleaders. They have no running game. It's like two virgins can't find the damn hole.
The narrow-eyed man sees an armored truck stop at a traffic light across the street. The truck turns and pulls up in front of the bank. The short-haired driver looks at his narrow-eyed companion.
Take over and bet the farm, you understand? The pigs, the barn, and the little chickens and that raggedy-ass tractor. Bet all of that.
Across the street, a guard opens the back of the truck.
America, come on.
Puffing on a cigarette, the narrow-eyed man watches the guard head inside with a bag and a dolly.
You find your wrinkle-titty grandmother want to bet the Cowboys. Therefore, they gotta win by two touchdowns just to cover.
In the back, the plain-faced man looks through a jeweler's loop. Across from him, the long-haired man loads a rifle.
American sport, I don't care.
I hate football.
Talking about my sport.
Across the street, the guard shuts the truck's doors.
Not covered.
1 minute, fellas.
In the back, all the men put on ski masks and rubber gloves. The armored truck drives away from the bank.
Okay, let's do it.
The short-haired driver turns the ignition, shifts into drive, and floors it. In back, the mustached guy grabs a lit cigarette from his partner's lips.
It's a nasty habit, man.
As the van swerves, the mustached man skewers the cigarette on a loose, hair-thin cord. Cutting off another car, the van fishtails to a stop in front of the bank. The men leap out of the back of the van. As the driver hops out, the narrow-eyed leader looks around the street. Now, the armed crew bursts through the bank doors, knocking a guard down several stairs.
Everybody down on the ground!
What are you doing?
Get down!
Hello. 2 minutes.
Three thieves run downstairs to a vault. Out in the van, smoke wafts from the skewered cigarette. In the bank, one robber detonates a charge, gaining access to a room of safety deposit boxes.
No cameras.
All three remove their masks.
1798.
That's a bad year.
A thief upstairs eyes a stopwatch.
90 seconds!
His accomplice points a rifle. In the vault, the other three search the rows of security boxes.
Got it.
As time ticks away on the stopwatch, the leader pries the security box out. His plain-faced partner digs through the contents.
1 minute!
Right here. Who's that?
Tossing aside bond certificates and jewelry, the thief finds a tiny wrapped packet. He opens it, and a cherry red gemstone drops into his hand. In the van, the cigarette ignites a fuse.
All right, 45!
Downstairs, the plain-faced thief inspects the gem with his loop. The leader smiles.
30 seconds!
plain-faced man tightens a pouch and passes it to the leader, who shoves it in his jacket pocket. As the fuse burns in the van, the robbers race out of the bank and remove their masks. Splitting up, the plain-faced and short-haired thieves run across the street. Behind them, the leader and the other two flee in the opposite direction. The pair of thieves gets into an older boxy coupe and speeds away from the scene. The other three hop into a black sedan. The long-haired man gets behind the wheel, shifts into drive, and peels away from the curb. They speed past a police car.
Bring out the diamond. Let's see that $10 million red beauty, baby.
The leader reaches into his pocket and takes out the pouch. Emptying it, he finds a bracelet.
Damn!
Behind them, the van explodes in a massive fireball.
The Surgeon General was right. Cigarettes can kill.
No. Go back.
Is there a problem?
I said go back!
The long-haired driver bangs a 180. Smoke churns off the tires. Outside the bank, police surround the burning van. As a crowd gathers, one officer stands in front of the approaching sedan and stops it just shy of the burning van. Now speeding away in the boxy coupe, the plain-faced and short-haired thieves look back with smiles. The plain-faced man holds the red diamond in his palm. In the sedan, the narrow-eyed leader furrows his brow and peers ahead through the windshield. Framing his face, the reflected flames shimmer brilliantly. A feverish grin curls across his lips. As the fire fills our view, the leader's cold eyes disappear behind it. Now words appear. 10 years later, in an office, a certificate from NYU's Department of Psychiatry reads, Nathan Radford Conrad, MD.
The psychodynamics of compulsive stealing are well established. An act committed to relieve a pre-existing state of guilt, an attempt to harm an imagined enemy, or a form of revenge against those who have deprived the person of something significant or somehow inflicted a narcissistic injury.
A middle-aged man in a suit closes a book.
But stealing panties from the girls' locker room, there's nothing in there.
He sits facing a dark-haired teenage boy.
I've never really been a big fan of Freud's anyway. I don't know if I should say this. I'm a professional.
The teenager looks up.
I won't say anything.
You promise to keep your word?
The boy nods.
Okay. Well, you know that thing that you were doing with the panties? Everybody does it. I mean, your best friends do it. The mailman does it. The science was even the headmaster. And if anybody tells you they don't, they're lying.
Nathan eyes a clock.
My mom says I'm oversexed.
Now you're dead!
In a bedroom, a TV shows Joe Pesci as a robber getting blasted with feathers. Watching the movie, a young girl colors on a dark-haired woman's leg cast. The woman, whose leg is raised in traction, types on a laptop. The young girl picks up.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Daddy.
Excuse me, who am I speaking to?
This is me.
No. My Jessie is 8 years old. The girl I am talking to is at least 11. Can I speak to your mother, please?
Mom.
Hey, don't forget the turkey, okay?
Well, why don't you have them deliver it?
It's Thanksgiving Eve, Nathan. Might as well get the bird to fly over here.
All right, okay. Fairway, right? What's the cross street, 74th?
Man, it's a steel trap.
I will be there in 10 minutes.
Right, bye.
Now, Nathan heads along a causeway in a metallic SUV. He lifts a pager.
Go away.
He reads a 212 phone number on the display, puts the pager down, and focuses on the road ahead.
Oh, come on.
The pager illuminates the number, 911. Nathan slams it down and furrows his brow. Headlights shining, the SUV continues along the causeway. Our view drifts toward the water below. Amongst leaves and debris, a human body floats face down in the river. The figure bobs in the water in a white blouse and black pants. Now, Nathan turns into the gateway of a stately stone building and drives past a guard booth. Words appear. Bridgeview Psychiatric Hospital. Parking, Nathan gets out and presses a remote. Inside. Inside, he steps off an elevator and spots a chunky man.
Lewis, this better be a real emergency.
Oh, my hero. Look, she's not one of your Dalton Trust Fund waifs, but I think she needs your help.
I don't know, Lewis. I don't talk to you for days or the night before Thanksgiving.
Opening a file, Nathan eyes photos of a bloody man.
Lucky guy's still alive. She took a razor to this orderly up in Rockland, 111 stitches to close them up.
What was the trigger?
Very good question. Been in and out of institutions for 10 years.
I've seen that. Selective mutism, obsessive compulsive behavior, post-traumatic symptoms.
20 different hospitalizations, 20 different diagnoses, plus an IQ off the charts. Apparently saw her father killed by a subway when she was 8.
Dr. Sachs?
What?
Dr. Sachs?
What?
Look, the girl who was biting the heads off pigeons, she has one of our med students in a headlock.
So call security, make sure the student documents the attack and gets a cosign.
Lewis, I don't know what the hell you want from me. Look, I got a family home waiting.
Nathan, spend 15 minutes with her.
Lewis.
She's an 18-year-old girl, never heard a fly until last week. You and I right now are the only thing that stands between her and a lifetime supply of Thorazine.
Well, wait a minute. Worse, what do you mean you and I, Kemosabe? She's your patient, your case.
Lewis points at him.
You're better at this stuff than I am, okay? You're better. Everybody knows about Nathan Conrad and the famous touch with the teens. Come on, Elizabeth Burroughs, this is the kind of case you and I used to live for before you went uptown on it. Just kidding. I didn't mean it that way. Look, she needs you.
All right, she needs me. But what's the emergency? Why tonight?
Because if we don't make some progress with her by Monday, they're going to ship her up to Creedmoor and chain her to a bed for the rest of her natural life.
A guard turns a switch, opening a barred gate.
What's the new cocktail?
Haldol, Droperdol, and Ativan.
And she's awake?
Oh, yes, my friend, she's awake.
He told me to stay.
In the forensic transitional unit.
Is she eating?
Not eating, drinking, sleeping, bathing, letting anybody touch her, or saying a word.
Lewis types in a code, opening a cage wire door.
Dr. Sachs, he told me to stay.
I will have a word with him. I promise, Louise. I promise.
The doctors approach a guarded door and peer through a window.
What's with the heavy artillery?
Well, it took about 5 guys to get her off the poor fella up in Rockland.
Would you open the door, please?
A muscular attendant unlocks the door.
You okay?
Am I okay?
Yeah.
I'm okay.
As Nathan enters, Lewis steps into an adjacent viewing room. In the patient's dim quarters, drab tiles line the floor and walls. As Nathan paces in, he keeps his eyes on the teenage occupant, who sits on a cot with her back to him. Bruises cover her legs and arms. The psychiatrist passes the two-way mirror and faces the motionless girl. A tray of untouched food sits on a chair in front of her.
Hello?
He draws closer.
Elizabeth, my name is Dr. Conrad. I'm a psychiatrist. Word has it that you haven't eaten for days. Well, I can understand that. I used to work in this hospital. I know what the food's like.
Lewis watches through the two-way mirror as Nathan clears the tray off the chair and sits facing Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, would you mind if I took your pulse?
Her face remains completely still.
That means I'm going to have to touch you.
He reaches his hand out slowly and lowers it over her arm. While fixing his eyes on Elizabeth's emotionless face, he gently flips over her frail, bruised arm. The veins on the inside of her elbow reveal more bruising. As he feels Elizabeth's wrist, Nathan looks down at his watch. He studies her face. The patient's coarse, dirty blonde hair trembles with her breathing. The psychiatrist glances back at his watch, then lifts Elizabeth's arm into the air. He lets go, and her arm drops to her side.
Now that's not supposed to happen. True catatonics have what's called a waxy flexibility of their limbs. That means they stay exactly where they're posed.
Elizabeth moves her arms together.
There's more to you than meets the eye, Elizabeth. You're very, very good at what you do.
She looks directly at him.
So maybe we'll talk next week.
Getting up, he rubs her shoulder and heads to the door. Elizabeth raises her right hand and twiddles her fingers in the air.
You want what they want.
In the viewing room, Lewis straightens.
Don't you?
Elizabeth turns around and squiggles her index finger.
What who wants?
She falls back on the cot and presses her hands against the wall.
Elizabeth, what who wants?
I'll never tell. I'll never tell. Any of you?
Nathan listens intently.
Any of you? Any of you?
Smiling, she looks at the wall. Now, in his SUV, Nathan sits in traffic. With a wrinkled brow, he looks down to his side and lifts a notepad. At the bottom, his handwriting reads, "What they want." The psychiatrist stares at the three-word question. Now, in a kitchen, an elderly woman wearing a robe cuts the crust off a white bread sandwich. With a smile, she places the sandwich on a plate next to a tomato cut like a flower, then licks her fingers. The woman then pours a glass of sherry and smiles at her meal. Lifting it on a wooden tray, she heads down the main hallway of her condo. She looks over her shoulder, then takes a few steps toward the front door. As she narrows her gaze on the locked deadbolt, the latch knob turns. The door opens a few inches, but stops short as the chain lock pulls taut.
Hello?
A set of bolt cutters pokes into view and severs the chain lock. The long-haired thief looms in the doorway. As the elderly woman drops her tray and backs away, he charges after her. Now, the narrow-eyed leader enters with black cases.
5-3, this old bag doesn't have cable. I need my sports center.
His once-mustached accomplice now dons a goatee. Now, in a bright corridor, Nathan approaches the door to his condo. He sets down a bag and opens the door.
Hello?
Nathan strides past some flowers.
Well, this certainly looks like the Conrad residence. It smells like the Conrad residence. And it is definitely overheated like the Conrad residence.
He peers into a living room, then turns around.
But it doesn't sound like the Conrad residence. I'm looking for a little girl, about 4'2", light brown hair.
He checks a colorful bedroom full of art supplies and dolls.
Huh. Where did she go?
He checks a bathroom.
Well, I'm gonna have to go downstairs and find myself another little girl.
Nathan searches a dark walk-in closet.
Well, I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Some hangers move.
Ah! Ah! Hi. Hi, Daddy.
How are you?
Look what I did in art class today.
A drawing of skiers.
The colors. You got such unique vision.
It's my vision, I swear.
Aren't you supposed to be in bed by now?
I can't sleep. I have mental problems.
Oh, I see. What kind of mental problems?
I'm highly neurotic.
Oh, I think you've been in my study again.
I needed the stapler.
Go say goodnight to Mom.
Jessie gives her mom a hug.
Night, Mommy.
Night, baby. How much? Brush your teeth.
Yep.
Yes, Mom.
Delicious.
Now in Jessie's room.
Right over here by you, on that side. And I'll put Sally over here and keep it company.
He tucks a floppy stuffed doll next to her.
You had a bad day.
Nathan knits his brow.
Why do you say that?
Frown face.
The way you have a frown face is because it's after 10 o'clock and you're still awake.
How were you tonight?
I was working.
Why?
Because I was helping a young girl.
Jessie narrows her eyes.
All right, but that's gonna cost you.
All right, what's it gonna be?
One hug, two kisses.
Two kisses? Boy, you cut a tough deal. Okay, here's one hug. And one kiss. And two kisses.
They put Bart Simpson in the parade tomorrow.
They will put Bart Simpson in the parade if you go to sleep right now.
Okay, but I don't think they'll care if I go to sleep or not.
Grinning, Nathan turns off a lamp.
Good night, sweetheart. I love you.
Love you, too.
He kisses Jessie's forehead. Outside her window, he notices a kite snagged under a window on the next building. Meanwhile, under the causeway, a patrol boat shines a light on the river, and several emergency vehicles sit parked at the waterfront. A smooth-skinned brunette woman arrives on the scene. She approaches a balding man who stands near a yellow body bag.
Is it Simon?
I'll see you later.
Detective Cassidy, what can I do for you?
What do we got?
Florida female, no ID. Maybe in her 20s.
Detective Cassidy peels back the covering.
Sloughing of her skin tells me she's been in the water maybe 2-3 days.
This time of year, the water cold could be longer.
Couple of 3 days tops.
Wearing a latex glove, Cassidy checks the body's abdomen, then finds bruises circling the wrists.
Her hands have been tied. Did they recover any rope or anything?
They're still looking.
Cassidy frowns in thought. A breeze ruffles her bangs.
Another body was found a couple days ago. Battery Park area?
Yeah. Victim was male, middle-aged, day before yesterday.
Right. I'm going to need preliminary findings by tonight.
Tomorrow's the best I can do.
Thank you. First thing, though.
A steamy breath escapes her lips as she regards the body. Back in bed, Nathan's wife holds a water glass as she uses her laptop. Nathan eyes her seductively with a sponge, a towel, and a bowl.
You can't be distracted.
He turns off the lights.
Here you are.
He shuts the door.
Mobile.
He turns off the TV, leaving only the glow of many candles in the fireplace.
Totally exposed. And quite vulnerable.
He sets the bowl on her nightstand.
I think you need a bath.
Guess what, sweetie?
What?
I already had a bath today.
You did? Oh, well, you didn't have Nathan Conrad fantastic special bath, did you?
No.
No, you didn't do that.
I didn't get that one yet.
Nathan squeezes a sponge over her bare knee.
Not too hot, is it?
No, it's nice.
Oh, good.
As he runs the sponge along her thigh and calf, he leans his lips to hers. Aggie cradles the back of his head, welcoming each eager kiss.
We should keep it down.
You're the one that makes the noise.
French doors on their stone balcony frame a view of the kissing couple. Morning. City workers swivel a traffic light's boom out of an intersection. Policemen stroll past sawhorse barricades, and a child grips a guardrail. As huge balloons inflate at street level, Nathan cracks eggs into a bowl. Nathan tosses eggshells into the sink and melts butter on a griddle. He slings egg-drenched bread onto the griddle, slices fruit for 3 plates, then carries a prepared tray.
Prepare to die of delight. Jesse, come on, let's join the downhill racer.
He breezes past Jesse's door and gently butts open the door to the master bedroom.
I heard that about the downhill racer.
Oh, honey, you were dreaming. I didn't say anything.
It was icy, you know?
I know it was, baby.
I'm very windy, too.
It was a hell ride. Good morning.
Morning. I think she's still sleeping.
I don't know.
Jesse? Jesse, come on. The parade's gonna start soon.
Nathan finds her bedroom empty, shakes his head, and checks the walk-in closet across the hall. It's also empty.
Jesse, come on. Breakfast is getting cold.
He returns to Aggie.
Does she have a new hiding place that I don't know about?
Probably. She's been running around the house like a wildcat all week.
Jesse! Get in here right now!
Honey, eat it up before it gets cold.
Nathan. She wouldn't go out on the balcony, right?
Nathan gazes solemnly at Aggie. Entering the living room, he stares at sheer drapes blowing in a draft from a set of French doors. Nathan swallows hard. He strides forward and brushes the drapes aside. Stepping out to the stone railing, he lets out a steamy breath. Pigeons fly from an ornate ledge as he peers 3 stories down to the street below.
She's not there. She knows better to go outside without asking us, doesn't she?
Jesse! Get in here right now!
Nathan stops in the front hall, finding the door chain severed. He slowly paces closer to it. Nathan's jaw tightens and he charges the door. He anxiously fingers the severed chain, then flings the door open and scans the outer hall. Nathan finds a single red sock left on the hall carpet. In her bedroom, Aggie watches TV.
I want you to get out of here and go home and enjoy your Thanksgiving.
That's right. Get started on that pecan pie.
She bought a sweater with socks.
What?
Happy Thanksgiving.
She's gone.
No
What do you mean she's gone? Wait, where is she?
Somebody came in.
No, no, she's in the hallway. She's
Somebody fighting. Took her.
Nobody took her, Nathan.
Aggie, they broke it. They cut the chain on the door.
What? Well, Nathan, call the police.
I can't get it dialed. Flo, get off the line. This is an emergency. There's something wrong with Tim.
There is nothing wrong with the phone, Nathan.
Get off the line. There's an emergency, damn it.
Yeah, I know.
Holding the cordless phone, Nathan tensely regards Aggie.
Who is this?
We have your daughter.
Nathan nods bitterly.
Who is it?
What's your worst fear, Nathan?
What?
Nathan, what is this?
I read the first shock can actually buckle the knees. Any truth in that?
Where is she?
She's unharmed.
Give it to me.
I don't want to have to hurt her.
Give it to me.
I want something from you.
No.
What?
Not until I talk to my daughter. I know that she is okay.
Rule number one, you do not make demands. You listen to what I tell you.
You call me back when I can talk to my daughter.
What the hell are you doing?
Aggie.
What the hell are you doing?
Listen to me, Aggie.
No, are you crazy?
Listen.
Are you
listen
crazy?
To me.
He hugs her.
No,
Aggie,
no.
Aggie, we have to make sure she's all right.
What if they don't go back?
Daddy?
Jesse, are you okay, sweetie?
Honey, have they hurt you?
No. Daddy, can I come home now? Daddy?
As Nathan stands, Aggie falls crooked.
That was very brave, Nathan.
You saw me how much money you want.
I don't want your money. Pick up your wife before she breaks the other leg.
Nathan helps Aggie sit up. Nathan checks her metal traction frame, then eyes the French doors.
What? Nathan, what is it?
He takes the cordless in hand, then reaches for the drapes.
Don't close the curtains. I like the view.
He sees hundreds of windows.
Good. Now, on the bureau by the door is a cell phone. I know what you're thinking. Don't. By the time you hear the one in 911, Jesse will be dead. Rule number two, do not try to call or signal anyone.
If you do, I will kill your daughter, not because I want to, but because those are the rules. Do you understand?
Yes.
Well,
Aggie tearfully watches her pacing husband.
I can see you. I can hear you. When you leave your building, wherever you go, you will be watched. So if you want to see your daughter alive,
don't say a word.
Now, tell me you understand.
I understand.
Good. You have a pro bono patient. Her name is Elizabeth Burroughs. A very disturbed girl. She has a 6-digit number in her head, locked away in her troubled mind. She guards it with her life.
What kind of number?
That needn't concern you right now.
I need that number. You need your daughter back. That is why this is happening. You're a professional, Nathan. So am I.
If we both do our jobs to the best of our abilities,
by this time tomorrow, it'll be like we never even knew each other.
Nathan gathers items from Jesse's room.
Go back to Bridgeview. Take the rover.
No police, no detours. And Nathan, Aggie will be fine.
Rule number three. You have until 5 p.m. today.
He takes a wrapped candy, her doll Sally, a drawing tablet, and her crayon picture. Next, he sets his cell phone on Aggie's nightstand.
Let's do exactly what he says.
Nathan sneaks a note into Aggie's hand.
Nathan, why don't we just call the police?
Because we can't.
Nathan!
Because I believe him.
Nathan leaves. Aggie unfolds the scrap of paper in her hand. It reads, "Use the cell if you're in danger." Now, in his gold Land Rover, Nathan weaves recklessly through traffic. He passes a sedan on the right, briefly tailgates a truck, and then passes it on the right. His brake lights come on as he approaches an intersection. He turns. Later, steam wafts in the air as a float passes a roadblock. On the float, a giant cobbler works on a shoe, and people in elf costumes wave from a boot as big as a house. A policeman scolds Nathan, who slows before a cluster of marching band musicians. As the musicians part, he drives on. A black-clad motorcyclist follows. Nathan halts behind parade watchers, then suddenly looks up. His windshield reflects a Bart Simpson balloon drifting by.
Roll down your window, sir.
Nathan shows a card to a stern policeman.
Officer, I'm a doctor.
Congratulations. You happen to notice the tuba player that rolled off your hood back there?
I need to get through this parade. I need an escort to the Bridgeview Psychiatric Hospital right now.
Do I look like a freaking helicopter? Use 57th Street like everyone else.
The motorcyclist flips up his helmet visor.
Talk to the cops. What do we do?
Be patient.
There's a young girl that could die. So, Officer Creepin, you can either help me save this girl or not.
As the pale-faced motorcyclist watches, the police clear a path for Nathan.
Just picked up a police escort and cut through the parade.
The motorcyclist shakes his head and flips down his visor. He turns a 180 and speeds away. Meanwhile, Nathan follows two police motorcycles. He finds a cell phone next to him. A bolted metal plate with a happy face drawn on it covers the keypad's numbers. He answers.
The police escort. I like it a lot.
You didn't tell me the context of the number.
She knows.
Look, this girl has a decade of pathology to unravel. Even if she knows, your 5 o'clock deadline is absurd.
In my experience, people are at their best when facing unreasonable deadlines.
You can't just flick a switch in the girl's head. You have to trust me. It does not work that way in these cases.
Look, in the seized condo, monitors show Nathan's apartment.
But you have family obligations right now. And Nathan, don't lose the phone.
A hidden camera view shows Aggie in bed. The goateed thug keeps watch at a table set up with surveillance equipment. Inside an adjacent room, the long-haired thug flips playing cards on a needlework footstool. Seated on nearby bed, Jessie idly dangles her one bare foot and her other stockinged foot. She stares at the man. As he returns the gaze, she looks away. Now, outside Bridgeview, Nathan leaves the motorcycle escort. His Land Rover pulls through a gate. Across the street, the helmeted thug stops his motorcycle and gazes after Nathan. Inside, a guard unlocks a door for Nathan, who waits with a bin containing the items from Jesse's room. Gaining entry to an office, he tries a file cabinet drawer. He finds a gold letter opener, breaks the lock, and removes a file. He then turns on a desk lamp over a stack of files. His gaze shifts to a wall clock which reads 10:10. Back in bed, Aggie scratches at her thigh just under the lip of her plaster cast. Grimacing, she grabs a knitting needle off the bedside table, then slides it deep under her cast and briskly runs it back and forth. As she returns the long needle to the nightstand, her gaze lands on the cell phone. Aggie discreetly grabs it and passes it under her legs to the middle of the bed. As she keeps it out of sight of the bedroom windows, she dials 911. Startled, she deactivates the cell and reaches for the cordless handset.
I thought Nathan explained the rules very clearly. Put the cell phone back.
She obeys.
There's no percentage in breaking those rules.
If your husband is on his game today, you've got nothing to worry about.
There's a good side to this, Aggie. This will bring you much closer than the occasional ski trip or sponge bath.
She disgustedly flicks the phone away. Now, Nathan views a cracked photo of a sad-faced girl, then the name, Burroughs, Elizabeth. He underlines the phrase, father, John Doe, deceased, then reviews recent photos and brain scans. His pen tip roves down a list of medications, and he circles the word discontinue. A provisional diagnosis reads, first schizophrenic break. Others include disorder, stress, syndrome, and manic depressive. The word mania gives way to suicidal. Nathan rubs his lips. Elizabeth's glassy eyes peer out from her photos. Lewis arrives and stops short in the doorway.
Nathan, what are you doing here?
You're not supposed to be here.
How'd you get in? Who let you in?
You're supposed to be in Greenwich with Kim and her family. Why are you here on Thanksgiving?
Why am I here on Thanksgiving?
I got to testify in a double homicide on Monday, and I thought I'd come to my office to do a little research.
He looks from the desk to the cabinet.
You broke into my files. Those are my personal... I would have given you the key, man.
Have you gone through all of this?
Well, not all of it. I mean, I just got here, but I've been through the master file. I told you, it's a swamp of misdiagnosis.
I think she's overlaying.
Overlaying?
Lewis, she is a brilliant mimic. That's why Rockland couldn't figure her out. She's highly adaptive. She takes on the symptoms of other patients. She's like a counterfeit schizophrenic, maybe.
Nate, come on. I can't believe it's all smoke and mirrors.
She has classic post-traumatic stress symptoms. Her PTSD is real. Seeing her father die, that was ground zero. She also believes that something or somebody is after her. And that is why she stayed institutionalized these past 10 years. She wants to stay inside.
So, 20 different hospitalizations.
The clock reads 10:30.
20 different diagnoses. All overlay. Nathan, that would make her a very talented young lady, wouldn't it?
Or desperate.
Nathan leaves the office with the items from Jesse's bedroom. Now, in Elizabeth's room, the weary patient holds on to the gridded wire window as she watches a tugboat cruise on the river. In the hall, Nathan arrives at Elizabeth's door. He takes a deep breath and enters. Inside, Elizabeth remains seated on the windowsill.
Elizabeth, good morning. You feeling better? I brought you something.
Lewis watches in the viewing room.
Chocolate turkey. The sugar will help you metabolize all those meds they've been giving you.
He sets the candy next to her. Standing with her back to the window, Elizabeth grips the wire grid and stretches.
You like Thanksgiving? My favorite holiday.
As he takes off his coat, Elizabeth caresses her smooth, flat stomach. She runs her hand up her own shirt to her concealed left breast.
Want a touch?
Sorry?
I saw you looking.
I know what you're trying to do. You want to embarrass me. It won't work.
She glumly grabs the chocolate turkey and taps the two-way mirror separating them from the viewing room.
The other doctor?
Dr. Sachs.
Yeah.
She stows the turkey under her pillow.
I don't like him.
Well, I can understand that.
Very funny.
Elizabeth shrugs.
Elizabeth, there's something important that I have to ask you.
She leans casually against the wall.
But first, I want to show you something. I have a daughter. She's 8. Going on 18. Her name's Jessie. I have some of her favorite things here. This is important. Here's a who. Read it to her so many times, it's pretty worn by now.
He lays the red book on her bed and she steps closer.
On this, she loves to draw weird pictures of me.
Elizabeth pulls up a chair to the other side of the bed and watches him closely. As he draws on the tablet, she pats her bare feet on the tile floor. Next, Nathan shows her Jesse's floppy doll.
And this. This is Sally.
A grate near the floor conceals a microphone.
Would you like one of those?
The goateed thug listens.
I'll make sure the hospital lets you keep it. You can only choose one.
What the hell is this? Toys R Us?
Want me to choose for you?
Elizabeth bats away the tablet and book and sits dangling the doll by its long yellow hair.
Choose for you.
She unwraps the chocolate turkey.
Dr. Conrad?
Yes.
Get out.
The narrow-eyed thug leader listens while pacing.
No.
I want you to leave.
No, we're not finished talking, Elizabeth.
I know what you're trying to do. You want to embarrass me. It won't work.
Back in the seized condo, Jesse watches the long-haired thug flip cards.
What's your name?
J. Jessie squints and points to her own neck.
It's the thing on your neck. It's kind of impolite not to answer someone's question.
The thug glances at her.
It's a symbol.
As he eyes her, Jessie holds her feet.
What's it mean?
No talk.
At the hospital.
Elizabeth, there's something I need to know.
Jessie.
Jessie. And that's my little girl's name. You want to see a picture that Jessie drew?
He keeps the drawing folded.
I'll make you a deal. I'll show you the picture if you answer my question. Is it worth just one answer? I don't mean a yes or no answer.
Maybe.
The narrow-eyed thug halts.
All right, I'm going to ask my question now, Elizabeth. Is the man that you hurt in Rockland, did that have anything to do with the terrible thing that happened to you in the subway years ago?
Come on, honey, run!
She remembers fleeing with her father.
See, I didn't know what you were talking about yesterday.
Run!
I didn't know who they were or what
Leave.
They wanted. But now I do.
Leave.
I know how bad they wanted it.
Leave.
And I know how
Leave.
Important it was for you to hold
Leave.
On to.
Elizabeth,
as Nathan strides out, Elizabeth tears up the picture and throws the pieces at him. Wincing tearfully, she climbs into bed with Sally.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
In the hallway, Lewis steps out and meets the harried psychiatrist.
You lost her.
She's still got the doll, doesn't she?
Nathan uses a keypad. Later, he heaves into a toilet. He rinses out his mouth. Nathan checks his tired face in a mirror, then uses some paper towels. He answers the happy face cell phone.
Yeah, that went well.
Look, I can gain her trust, but without more information, I'm shooting in the dark.
The answer's right in front of you.
I have gone through her files, all right?
And look closer.
I look. You tell
Nathan. Me. It's 12:22.
At Lewis's desk, Nathan leafs through files. He eyes a 1991 admittance record of a victim found at the Canal Street IRT station. Nathan tears the page out, then eyes newspaper clippings. One reads, "Girl found wandering on Hart Island." Its photo shows policemen with a blonde child. Another reads, "John Doe homicide victim's child found." Now Nathan finds Lewis in the viewing room.
I have to go. You have to call me back.
Lewis pockets his phone.
You seen this?
He looks at the clipping.
What's this?
A young girl was found yesterday among the coffins on Hart Island. This is around the time that her father died. I should run this by child services. Could she have been lost or unattended? What? That's very bizarre.
On an island in the East River.
Now at the city morgue.
Sarah, 2 days ago, she was meeting a boyfriend in the village. Maybe she's still with him.
She could be.
Cassidy ushers a young brunette past a lab door.
Hey, Dick. Try 57 and just her face. Thanks.
Yeah, okay.
They enter a narrow room.
Come on. It stinks in here. It smells weird.
I know it does. Just breathe through your mouth.
I've never seen anyone dead before.
You'll do fine, okay?
The brunette stops.
I'm gonna get sick. Listen, no one in here is gonna mind, okay? Come on.
Cassidy takes her to a narrow horizontal window overlooking the lab. Cassidy steps away.
Listen, I've gotta take this, but I'm gonna be right here.
As Cassidy takes a call, a colleague brings a file.
Cassidy.
Oh.
Hey, baby. I'll be at Penn Station by 2.
Make it 7.
Cassidy paces.
I promise.
Don't promise.
Yeah, I'm almost done here. Yeah, I'm at the city morgue.
The brunette turns away from the window.
That's your NCIC on the guy with the busted neck.
Oh, I got a hit. Leon Edwards Croft.
As Cassidy eyes a mugshot, Jake wheels out a bagged corpse.
What does he have, 15, 20 arrests here?
Well, he's a busy little bad guy. Won't be missed.
You running for known associates?
Of course I ran for known associates. Am I not a paid professional?
Jake reveals Sarah's face. The brunette hides her face. Cassidy hugs her.
It's okay.
Now Cassidy and her colleague confer.
The guy with the cigarette burns, Croft, he was the driver for this crew.
Robbery said they hit banks here, Jersey, Delaware, Virginia. No convictions till 91. And three of his friends just capped off a 10-year jolt in Attica.
A mugshot shows the leader's picture.
Patrick Barry Coster. He's the last one that got out November 4th. November 4th? Did Croft rat these guys out?
I don't know. Could be payback.
He has no priors. There is nothing on him. He just came out of nowhere. There's nothing.
I know. It's the only thing he ever got popped for. Guy's a ghost.
He's a ghost.
Cassidy eyes Patrick's dossier.
Well, I guess that's why I need to talk to them. Thank you.
Watch your back.
Yeah.
Now, in her tile and plaster room at Bridgeview, Elizabeth huddles with Sally on a recessed windowsill. Nathan enters.
Well, you picked Jesse's absolutely favorite thing. She and Sally were inseparable since they were two.
Nathan faces another gridded wire window.
Where is she?
Sunlight filters in.
Where's Jesse?
Nathan meets Elizabeth's intense, wary gaze.
They took her. Now she's really scared. As scared as you were when you went after that guy at Rockland, but she's only 8 years old, Elizabeth. She's not as strong as you are. She can't protect herself as well as you can. See, I am not just here to help you. I need you to help me.
Picking at grout with her fingers, Elizabeth trembles and stares.
Otherwise, I'm not getting my little girl back.
The patient's lips tighten in a quick, teeth-baring wince. Nathan stares out the window.
Today's Thanksgiving.
Lewis enters the viewing room.
You remember Thanksgiving?
Yes. Yes, I remember.
Elizabeth gazes off.
Who are you with?
My dad. Just me and my dad.
Patrick listens in on the session.
Being strong isn't only about protecting yourself. It's also having the strength to let go. Especially if you're holding on to something, holding on so tightly that you don't even know that you could have a better life.
Elizabeth sits on her cot.
The only way that you can help yourself is if you go back.
Elizabeth remembers running in a subway station, hanging on to her father's hand and glancing over her shoulder.
You have to go back to that day on the subway.
I can't.
Lewis leaves. In the seized condo, Patrick paces.
Here we go. Main event.
You can't help my little girl unless you go back.
No, please.
As Elizabeth twiddles compulsively, Nathan sits behind her.
Listen to me. The men that have Jesse are the same men that you're frightened of. They are the same men that sent the orderly at Rockland after you. All they want is a number.
You want what they want.
They know that you know the number, and they're gonna kill my little girl if you don't tell them the number.
Elizabeth remembers an oncoming train.
Is it a telephone number?
No.
An address?
No.
An account?
I don't know.
Is it a bank account?
No.
Is it a code?
No.
Is it a place?
No.
What is it?
Elizabeth lunges, grabbing Nathan's throat. In the seized condo, Patrick shifts.
What's wrong? We lost the feed?
No, we're good.
In Elizabeth's room.
You leave him alone.
Nathan pulls her hands off his neck.
Your father is gone. He is gone. And no one is going to hurt him anymore.
He holds Elizabeth's arms.
My little girl is still alive. Jesse is alive.
Elizabeth meets Nathan's gaze, trembling. A tear rolls down her agitated face. Still holding her wrists, Nathan drops his gaze. Elizabeth gazes at him, then looks down, weeping. Her mop of hair trails limply to her shoulders. Nathan leans forward, hugs her gently, and softly pats her back.
My love, I'm sorry.
Now, with the kidnappers, Jesse watches the long-haired thug go to the window. He cracks open a black shade, and sunlight streams in on the girl's face.
Long time since breakfast, huh?
The thug fiddles with playing cards.
Yeah.
He paces.
I wish we had some cheeseburgers.
Now, in her room, Elizabeth remembers her dad carving a turkey.
Whisper, I love you.
Elizabeth sings at a gridded window.
Birds singing in.
Best turkey ever had. Sit down. Careful, don't put you in the other window.
Dream a little dream.
Sweet. Her dad jiggles a stuffed doll.
I love you, Daddy.
Smiles at you.
He kisses her forehead. In another flash, her dad holds the red diamond to the light. With him, Leon grins. Now, in the hospital, Nathan paces outside Elizabeth's room. Lewis passes through the security doors carrying a syringe. He goes to Elizabeth's door.
What's that?
This is a 5cc syringe with a 10-gauge needle and 500 milligrams of sodium amytal.
What are you talking about 500 milligrams? Why don't you shove a quart of Jack Daniels down her throat or stick a shotgun in her mouth?
Look, the event is obviously right beneath the surface. She should respond beautifully to amytal, son.
Nathan glances toward the happy face phone in his pocket. He then eyes Lewis's jacket pocket.
Answer it.
As Lewis eases out a cell phone, Nathan grabs his hand. Instead of a keypad, a metal plate sports a round face with two eyes and a deadpan mouth.
You answer the phone.
As Lewis backs away, Nathan shoves him against a wall, snatches the syringe, and holds it to Lewis's neck.
Are you telling everything's okay? That you're going to plan B?
Lewis takes the call.
Everything's okay, and we're going to plan B. It's a drug.
Lewis ends the call and shuts his eyes.
You knew all about the numbers, and you set me up, Lewis.
I swear to God.
You tell me I why. You tell me why. I'm going to shove this right to
you. He's got my girlfriend. He's keeping Sarah hostage. He's going to kill her if I don't get this number.
Your girlfriend, Lewis?
Yeah.
Well, he's got my daughter.
Lewis's eyes dart behind his black-rimmed glasses.
He's got my little girl.
Nathan, I didn't know that.
Nathan lets go.
I'm sorry. I didn't know. I gotta get this number for this guy. He'll just go away.
It's that simple. It's that simple.
Dr. Sachs?
He eyes a young worker.
Dr. Sachs?
Yes?
There's a cop here to see you.
Cop? What kind of cop?
I don't know.
What does he want?
She didn't say, but she's waiting in your office.
Okay.
Lewis glances to Nathan, who nods slightly.
Tell her I'll be right there.
In the seized condo, the goateed thug watches Aggie on his monitors. Left alone, Jessie peeks out her window and spots a kite snagged on a window ledge across the way. She glances toward the door, then furtively slides a cushion off an air vent on the window bench. Through an inner set of pebbled glass doors, she spots shadows approaching. Jesse scurries onto the bed and sits cross-legged. Max brings in two plates of sandwiches and hands her one. Straddling a gold-leaf chair, Max sets his plate on a sewing stool. Jesse peers at her sandwich.
Peanut butter and jelly. What kind of jelly is it?
Now, in Lewis's office, Cassidy eyes photos of Elizabeth, younger and older.
Hello there.
Lewis shuts the door.
Lewis Sachs.
Hi, Detective Cassidy.
They shake hands.
Hi.
Hi.
He busily shuffles papers.
Pretty girl, is that your daughter?
This? No. This is not my daughter. How can I help you today, Detective?
I'm here about this woman.
It's a photo of Sarah.
You don't know her?
Lewis glances at the photo.
Nope.
Meanwhile, Nathan enters a room filled with medical supplies and opens a drawer. He takes out a long needled syringe, then reads the label on an ounce vial.
She worked in the department you oversee, Dr. Sachs.
She did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's strange, because in that case, I should know who she is. And I don't, so there's got to be a mistake.
When did you last see Sarah?
Detective, I just told you, and I'll tell you again, I do not know who that is.
In her room, Elizabeth stands wrapped in a coarse blanket. Sally's propped on a windowsill facing the sunlight. Nathan enters.
Where are we going?
Back with Cassidy, Lewis grins.
Do you have a lawyer, sir?
What?
Do you have a lawyer?
What are you talking about?
You don't know Sarah. You don't know Sarah, right?
No, I don't know Sarah, but what are we talking about? A lawyer?
See, this is last weekend with you by the fountain in Central Park. You took this picture.
She shows a morgue photo.
This is her now. This one you did, this one I took. Who do you think did better, me or you?
That's not Sarah.
Oh, that's Sarah, all right. That's Sarah laid out in the morgue.
No, it's not Sarah.
That's Sarah.
Lewis stares at the crime scene photo.
The morgue?
In the hall, Nathan ushers Elizabeth to the security door, quickly types a code in the keypad, and leaves. Back in Lewis's office.
That's a mistake. Can't be Sarah. That's not the deal.
That's not the deal?
That's not the deal.
That's not the deal. Okay, well, why don't you tell me what's the deal in?
She slaps down mugshots of Patrick, Leon, the long-haired guy Max, and the black guy Martin.
Tell me who is part of the deal.
Lewis points to Patrick.
We had until 5 o'clock today.
Who's
okay,
we?
Okay, so that's a mistake.
That is not a mistake.
Yeah, that's
who's
a mistake.
We?
And all we need is another half hour.
Dr. Sack, who is
that's
we?
Not that's not Sarah. That's not Sarah.
Why don't you quit wasting my time and tell me who's we?
In the seized condo.
You like country music?
Mm-hmm.
Max munches his sandwich.
Pink toenails. How am I gonna get pink toenails?
In the Conrad condo, Aggie wakes up from a nap.
It is getting stronger by the minute. It is.
Pink toenails. Got my pink.
Aggie listens. Patrick removes his earphone.
Oh, my girlfriends have time for the pink toenails.
In bed, Aggie's gaze shifts to an air vent on her bedroom's window seat. In the seized condo, Patrick strides into the hostage's room.
Hey, baby doll, when you finally sit there in my pink...
Patrick stares pointedly at Jesse, then swats Max's head. Jesse glances at the vent.
What did I say about noise?
Jesse quickly returns her gaze to Patrick. He leans toward her.
Daddy's smart little girl, aren't you?
Jesse sits motionless.
But I hope your mother didn't hear that.
Closing the door, he faces Martin.
Go full screen on her.
Facing his split-screen images, Martin hits some keys and enlarges the bedroom view.
Tighter.
The image zooms in on Aggie watching TV. Patrick leans closer. Now, in a Bridgeview corridor, Cassidy storms through a fire door and breaks into a run past vending machines. Back at the seized condo.
She heard.
Martin eyes Patrick quizzically.
How do you know?
She stopped breathing.
Now, in Bridgeview's security booth, the guard Arnie watches the monitors as he eats. Nathan approaches the door, and Arnie pushes a button, letting him in.
So what can I do for you, Doc?
Arnie spies Elizabeth on camera in the hall.
Arnie, I need to ask you a favor.
Are you taking Burroughs for a stroll?
Nathan follows his gaze to the security monitor. Now, in the seized condo.
We're out of here. Bring her!
As Jesse runs to the air vent, Max pulls her away. Aggie struggles frantically to jerk her leg free of the traction brace. As Max lugs the girl into an adjoining room, Patrick goes to Martin.
Take care of her.
At Bridgeview.
I need you to open the gates.
Whose authorization?
This is between you and me.
Arnie smiles and stands.
See, that's why they call this place the Nut House, Doc. Because I'd have to be, basically. Nuts to let you do that.
Nathan nods.
Okay. Well, you know, I just had to ask you.
Nathan stabs Arnie's arm with a syringe and injects him.
It's okay, Arnie. It's just, it's reset. It's okay. It's all right. You'll be all right in about an hour, all right?
Now, Detective Cassidy enters an elevator.
Yes,
meanwhile, Nathan turns knobs on a control box, then removes Arnie's gun from its holster. Now, Martin enters the Conrad home and unfolds a knife. In the master bedroom, Aggie grabs a paintbrush and frantically tries to loosen her cast from the traction gear. Back at Bridgeview, Nathan waits for an elevator with Elizabeth. As Cassidy exits, they slip inside. The detective notices Arnie's head slumped back in the security booth. She looks toward the elevator.
Dr. Conrad?
She runs over.
Dr. Conrad!
The door slides shut. She bangs on it, then hits two call buttons. As she rushes through an emergency exit, a red light flashes. Back at the Conrad home, Aggie struggles with the hardware attached to her cast. As Martin strides down the hall, she pries at a bracket. In the elevator at Bridgeview, Elizabeth watches the floor numbers light up in descending order. Cassidy hurries downstairs. She pushes past others.
Me.
Now Nathan ushers Elizabeth through double doors. Back at the Conrad home, Martin finds Aggie's bed empty. Meanwhile, Nathan brings Elizabeth to a lobby. Two security guards stand directly in his path. As one looks in his direction, the psychiatrist avoids his gaze and brushes past them. Now Cassidy cuts in front of another woman and emerges from the stairwell. In the Conrad home, Martin holds his knife poised as he exits the master bedroom and searches a bathroom. Meanwhile, Nathan walks Elizabeth outside Bridgeview, back in the lobby. As Cassidy crosses the lobby, Nathan helps Elizabeth into his Land Rover, back in the Conrad home.
Here's Hartford, 30 degrees.
As Martin returns to the bedroom, Aggie whacks him with a crutch. He falls onto his back, dropping the knife. Meanwhile, Nathan's Land Rover speeds out of its parking spot. Detective Cassidy rushes outside and watches it disappear around a corner. It passes the motorcyclist.
Central, be advised, a gold Land Rover just left Bridgeview. He's heading east.
They're leaving.
The driver is a Dr. Nathan Conrad, wanted for questioning in connection with the homicide.
As the motorcyclist pulls a U-turn on the street, a cab grazes him and he wipes out.
Have an RMP respond to his residence immediately.
The motorcyclist removes his helmet. Now, as Nathan drives, he unfolds a page from Elizabeth's medical file. One line reads, Canal Street IRT Station. Elizabeth touches her window. In a flashback, her younger self sits at a table as her father arrives with Leon. Her father picks up Mishka. Later, Leon rests his hands behind his head. Elizabeth's father rips open Mishka's dress. Back in the present, Elizabeth reaches out for Nathan. He takes her hand as he drives. Now, a door swings open to the old woman's condo. Aggie enters on crutches. She passes the empty kitchen, then approaches the surveillance monitors on the table. She sees the video feeds from her home. One shows Martin lying unconscious in her hallway. She moves to a closed door and opens it. Twin beds sit side by side, one made up tidily and the other rumpled. Now in Nathan's car.
Yeah.
What's on your mind, Nathan?
Field trip.
Meanwhile, Aggie finds a lumpy comforter on the floor between the two beds. Now with Patrick.
Wait a second. Wait a second, where are you taking Jesse?
Why are you moving her?
44 minutes.
Aggie reaches down and grabs the comforter. Back with Nathan.
Why are you moving her?
Aggie pulls the comforter back, revealing the old woman's corpse.
I will get you the number.
Just don't hurt her.
43 minutes.
Jesse sits behind him and blinks soberly as Patrick drives down an expressway. Now Nathan lowers the cell phone from his ear. With Aggie.
You have reached New York City's emergency services. Please stay on the line. Your call will be answered in the order in which it was received.
The surveillance monitor shows her hallway empty. Martin grabs her and throws her against a wall. She kicks him in the shin, then knocks him backward. They crash through the surveillance table. Martin rolls on top of Aggie and twists a power cord around her neck. As he fiercely grits his bloody teeth, Aggie squirms and kicks under his weight. She slaps him. Aggie grabs a computer component and bashes him on the head with it. He falls off of her, holding his head. As he starts to get back up, Aggie draws a knitting needle from her cast and spears him in the chest. He goes limp. Now, Nathan's Land Rover heads through Chinatown. He pulls over to a curb. Steam wafts across the sidewalk as he gets out of his vehicle and heads around to the passenger side. Elizabeth climbs out as well. She leans her head against the inside of the passenger window.
You all right?
Yeah.
Later, Nathan checks his watch as they head down a crowded sidewalk. Elizabeth looks across the street. Quick flashes show her younger self running with her father, and Patrick and Max chasing them. The adult Elizabeth shivers. She throws a jittery glance to the right.
This is where it happened, isn't it, Elizabeth?
No. When we left home, my dad and me.
In a flashback, a sedan careens down the road.
Big car, dark.
Patrick and Max jump out.
I'd never seen my dad so scared. He grabbed my arm. We got to running and running and running. And I tried to keep up.
Elizabeth and her father hurry toward the Canal Street station.
I tried to keep up.
They descend the stairs to the subway, back in the present.
You can do it.
Okay.
You can do it. Let's go.
I tried to keep up.
Holding his arm around her, Nathan brings her down into the station.
It's okay.
In another flashback, the 8-year-old Elizabeth glances over her shoulder.
Elizabeth.
A worker saws into a girder.
There were lots of people.
Elizabeth and her father run.
But my dad just pulled me through them. I look back. He's still behind us. Now only two men. We lost one. My dad took me around the corner.
They halt on the platform. Max rounds a corner in front of them. They turn and run the other way. Elizabeth's father pushes her against a girder.
He made me hide over here.
Elizabeth's dad grips her shoulders.
Okay, listen to me carefully, okay? You and me, Scar. You gotta wait right here. Right here, no matter what. It's gonna be all right. It's gonna be fine.
He kisses her cheek.
Right here.
He walks off with a bag over his shoulder. Patrick grabs him.
I could see my dad's face and he tried to talk to them.
There's nothing in the bag!
Patrick draws a gun.
Where is it? Where is it, Russell?
Max and Martin flank them.
What's happening now?
Where is it?
Elizabeth.
Patrick shoves Russell onto the tracks.
Elizabeth, what do you see?
Patrick kicks Russell away from the platform.
The one in the red coat kept on kicking him and kicking him. He's asking him, where is it? Where is it? Tell me where it is. Where is it?
Let me up! I'll tell you where it is!
Elizabeth.
A train approaches, its headlights shining.
Jesus, where is it? Come on, help me up.
And everybody was watching. They were just watching and no one would help. No one would help. No one. Everybody was watching, and no one would help!
Patrick kicks Russell in the face. In the glow of the oncoming headlight, Russell eyes his young daughter.
Elizabeth, what did the man want?
Back in the present.
What did he want?
I can almost reach him.
Elizabeth!
He pulls her away from an oncoming train. The flashback continues. A transit cop aims a gun at the thugs. Two more officers run over.
Down on your knees! Now!
What did the man want, Elizabeth? Did he want a number?
Now, Russell stuffs the red diamond inside Mishka.
Elizabeth, I need to know what the man wanted.
He wants Mishka. My doll.
And where is Mishka? Where is your doll?
Yeah, hang on to that, okay, baby?
Later, he and his daughter run through the street. Back in the present, Elizabeth turns away from Nathan. She runs her fingers up a transit map. Her fingertips move off of Manhattan onto the Long Island Sound, then pass over City Island and stop on Heart Island. Nathan remembers the headlines. Girl found wandering on Heart Island, and John Doe homicide victim's child found. Now, our view swoops in on a bridge. Back with Nathan and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Gonna get rather close.
All right. I have what you want.
Good. I'm listening.
Decided
I'm gonna deliver the number G in person.
No time.
The clock shows a minute to five.
No choice.
Being brave again, Nathan. That's the best way to get your daughter killed. Other than missing the deadline, which is less than 3 minutes away.
Rule number one, no more clock.
What?
You heard me.
Now I'll meet you there.
Where?
I think that you know where. Rule number two, I want to speak to my daughter now. Do you hear me? I want to speak to my daughter now.
Patrick hands his cell phone to Max, who holds it to Jesse's ear.
Daddy?
Pumpkin, you all right?
Yeah, Daddy, please come get me now.
I'm on my way, sweetheart.
Max returns the phone to his accomplice.
Anything else?
Rule number three, no more phone.
On a sidewalk, Nathan and Elizabeth cross paths with a man talking on a cell.
Oh, buddy, I got a medical emergency. I'll get this phone back to you. Yeah, I'll get it back to you.
He takes the man's phone, then gets into his Land Rover. He peels out. The happy-faced phone lies in a trash can. Now, at the old woman's condo, a crime scene photographer takes pictures of Martin's corpse. Paramedics tend to Aggie. She answers Nathan's cell phone.
Aggie?
Is she alive?
But she's fine.
Where is she?
Hey, listen to me. What is that? Did you call the police? Aggie?
No. But somebody did.
Do they know what's going on?
Not yet. Listen.
I'm here.
Just get her back.
Nathan folds up the stranger's cell phone. As his Land Rover speeds down a low-lying bridge at dusk, words appear. City Island. He pulls up to a closed chain-link gate and comes to a quick stop. Elizabeth lurches in her seat. Nathan jumps out and runs to the gate. Beyond lies a pier. Grabbing a padlock, he shakes the chain link. Now his Land Rover smashes through the gate and speeds down the pier. Elizabeth stares out the windshield. A sunny flashback shows a flatbed truck crossing the pier. In back, the 8-year-old Elizabeth looks around from between two wooden crates. A sign reads, Heart Island Ferry. Back in the present, Nathan parks his Land Rover. Later, he ushers Elizabeth across a lower-level dock to a motorboat. He helps her inside and sits her down. She tightens a coat around her body. Nathan throws the throttle forward, and they speed past the docks. He casts a glance over his shoulder as they cut a line in the water toward a distant island. Now, our view soars past a smokestack toward the Long Island Sound. The sun hangs low on the horizon behind Nathan and Elizabeth's boat. They arc toward a quaint wooden pier. Nighttime. Nathan tilts and aims their boat's bright headlight. Later, taut barbed wire goes out of focus, revealing his approaching motorboat in the distance. Tide crashes against another boat in the sand. Elizabeth tightens the lapels of her coat around her neck. Nathan's thick hair billows in the wind as he eyes the empty boat's blinking taillights. He steers them toward the beach. Later, Nathan and Elizabeth cross the sand to an open fence gate. He pauses. In the night air, misty vapor wafts from his mouth. He checks Arnie's gun, then puts it back in his coat pocket. He and Elizabeth cross under a wrought iron archway that reads, Potter's Field. Beyond it, tightly packed, cross-shaped grave markers stretch for acres like rows of crops. Leafless branches sway in the wind as Nathan and Elizabeth cross the cemetery. A bright light turns on, off to their side.
Officer Conrad!
Nathan and Elizabeth turn to face it.
You're a committed man.
Patrick approaches with a flashlight.
I want to see her now.
An accomplice follows the thug.
Grim place for a holiday, isn't it?
He lowers his flashlight beam.
Hello, Elizabeth. I've thought about you every day for the last 10 years. But you've thought about me, too. I know you've been through a lot. So have I. Your father let us both down.
Nathan steps between Elizabeth and Patrick.
Where's my daughter? You brought her here because she hasn't given it to you.
Where are you keeping her?
She won't give it to you.
I want to see Jesse now.
Where's my number?
You're not getting anything until I see that.
Patrick knocks Nathan to the ground.
We talked about bravery today.
He looks Nathan over, then grins.
It's no good.
He removes the gun from the psychiatrist's pocket.
He needs not to use these.
Nathan clambers onto all fours. He gets back to his feet.
I want to see my daughter.
Yeah, I think you've earned it. Max!
A flashlight turns on.
Daddy?
Jesse?
As Nathan starts to step closer, Patrick grabs him.
It's all right, honey. You'll be fine. It's gonna be all right. You guess the number is a grave. Very good. Now what?
I finish my job.
Back on the moonlit ferry dock, Detective Cassidy parks her car behind a police cruiser. An officer leans against the vehicle as she gets out.
Officer Peterson, nice work. Found my car. Where is it?
It's over there.
Okay, now where's my guy?
Well, he smashed through a steel fence on the corrections pier. Then he jacked a boat from that individual.
A boat?
Yeah, he and some girl.
Boat to where?
That's the Coast Guard's problem.
It is not the Coast Guard's problem. It is my problem. It is your problem. What is over there?
Now, Patrick leads the others into a dank workshop. Chains and winches hang from the ceiling.
Over there by the table. And Elizabeth?
Not her. Take her back outside.
Nathan faces his daughter.
Daddy?
Jesse, you're going to be all right, honey. You're going to be all right.
Now, let's see what 200 an hour can do.
Elizabeth watches a sliding door close in front of Jesse. Now, Cassidy rides away from the docks in a motorboat.
This boat's for charter, not running around the Grand Sound on Thanksgiving.
Like I said, sir, it's police business.
Now, do me a favor, Captain Blythe. Just drive the friggin' boat.
In the workshop, a gas lantern illuminates a wooden table.
Where's the music coming from, Elizabeth?
The radio.
Radio? Where?
Playing on the boat.
Elizabeth waves her fingers. Flashbacks appear.
The boat that brought you here the first time?
Young Elizabeth climbs in a truck full of plain coffins.
It was cold. I was wet. My eyes were burning, and I was with my dad.
How did you know which one was your dad?
I gave him a number.
Where was this number?
She rubs the tabletop. A flashback shows her at a coffin.
It's on his box. I carved the number on top of his box.
Patrick and Nathan watch as she traces her finger on the wood.
I tried to get it open, but my fingers were numb. And I couldn't lift it, it was too heavy.
The pickup driver sees her hiding.
I couldn't put Mishka inside.
Better pray she's lying, Nathan.
Where did Mishka go? What happened to Mishka?
They saw me.
Who saw you?
The men with the music. They were working. They said my lips were blue. And they gave me a blanket.
Young Elizabeth watches two men dig graves.
I told them my dad's inside. And I need to put her inside with them. I need to put Mishka in the box. I told them.
She slips Mishka inside the pine box.
What do they do?
Nathan takes a piece of dusty glass off the floor and places it under Elizabeth's twiddling fingers. He lowers her hand to the glass.
They helped me.
As flashbacks show her young fingertips tracing the coffin's routed numbers, Elizabeth's adult hand draws the numerals in the dust.
They helped me put Mishka inside the box with him. They let me stay with him. Until...
Her fingers shake as she marks the last digit. The men lower her father's coffin into the ground. As Nathan takes her hand, tears run down Elizabeth's cheeks. Patrick tucks his gun away, and Nathan slides the broken glass to him. Patrick smiles at the number written in the dust. 802-218. Now, he lays out a map of Potter's Field and runs his gloved finger over thousands of plots. On a numeric label, a hyphen separates a span of numbers from 825,000 to 840,000. Later, he pushes Elizabeth into a chair.
Sit down!
Daddy! Let me go!
He presses his gun to Elizabeth's leg.
I am going to put a bullet through your knee. Then you'll give me the right number. No!
Nathan rushes forward and yanks his arm. In the motorboat, Cassidy hears the shots. Patrick elbows Nathan away and aims at the fallen doctor. Elizabeth jumps on Patrick's back and chokes him. Max pulls her off and dumps her back in the chair. Patrick holds the gun to her head.
Tell you what, forget the number. Just say hi to your dad from me.
She gave it to you.
She gave me nothing.
She
gave me nothing.
Shut up.
Reverse the image in her mind.
Nothing, you lying bitch.
Cognitive distortion. She wrote it right to left. Look.
Nathan turns over the dusty glass.
She sees it in a mirror.
The reversed number reads 815-508. Patrick scowls at the traced number, then meets Nathan's gaze. Elizabeth trembles in her chair. Now, outside, Patrick strides through the brambles. Several yards behind him, Max holds a spotlight and some shovels as he herds Nathan forward.
So what do you think's gonna happen when you dig this thing up? He's gonna have you kill me and my little girl. And when you're done with us, he'll be done with you.
Just keep walking.
Now, the motorboat passes the stolen boat.
This is Detective Cassidy from Manhattan South Homicide. Shots fired on the northeast shore of Hart Island. I'm en route and I need harbor and aviation.
Now, an overhead view shows Nathan and Max digging a circular pit. Patrick walks around them, past the plain wooden crosses marking the graves. Gusty wind flutters Nathan's hair as he rests and studies his daughter's captor. Back in the workshop, the motorcyclist stands guard over the two girls. Lantern light shines on Jesse's teary cheeks. Elizabeth reaches across the table and takes her hand. Later, at the grave, Max's shovel hits bottom. Patrick smiles.
Go on, Max. Open it up.
The long-haired thug drives the shovel down hard. A view from inside the coffin shows the worn lid lift away. Max straddles the dirty grave. The wind blows his long hair across his chin as he looks to his boss. Their foggy breath quickly disperses in the breeze. Nathan and the motorcyclist gape as Max reaches down and pulls out Elizabeth's rag doll. Patrick snatches it greedily. He paces away, turning the doll over in his hands. He rips open the dress. In the workshop, Elizabeth and Jesse sit alone on the floor, bound by a pillar. Back at the grave, Nathan watches anxiously as the two thugs gather around Patrick. He tugs a small cloth pouch from the doll. With his back to the others, he empties it into his palm. The red diamond sparkles in his gloved fingers.
10 years of my life. Bought and paid for.
He tucks the jewel back in the pouch and stuffs it in his jacket pocket. Nathan watches as Patrick looks over his shoulder to Max.
Take care of that.
Max turns slowly and Nathan leans on his shovel. The thug looks away, reaching into his jacket. As he draws a pistol, Nathan grips the spade handle. He swings the shovel. Knocking the gun away, Nathan strikes his head. Patrick stops the motorcyclist from firing. Max jabs Nathan, who falls. Nathan ducks a swing from the shovel, which lops off the top of the grave marker. Then Nathan fells Max with a kick to the thug's knee. Patrick smiles as the two men struggle on the ground. Max smacks the shovel on a tombstone as Nathan dodges. The blade breaks off. As Nathan flees, Max grabs him. Nathan swings his fist wildly. The larger man maneuvers him into a chokehold from behind, then tosses Nathan onto a dirt mound. As Max stalks closer, Nathan grabs a handful of dirt. Now, Max grabs him and lifts the doctor into a bear hug. Nathan rubs the dirt into Max's eyes, and the thug falters. On the ground, Nathan kicks him in the crotch, then stands and whacks his leg with the shovel handle. As Max falls to his knees, Nathan drives the splintered tip toward the thug's neck, then hesitates. Patrick strides forward. In slow motion, he aims his pistol at Nathan, then shoots Max. In the workshop, the girls hear the shots. Max's body falls into an excavated trench. Nearby, Cassidy stalks closer, holding her gun low. She emerges from the leafless branches into the clearing as Patrick raises his gun to Nathan's face.
You're not like me, Nathan. I would have killed the man who took my little girl.
Police, don't move!
The motorcyclist looks from the detective to his boss.
Drop your weapon! Drop your weapon!
Come on.
The remaining thug whirls on Cassidy and fires. She drops him as Patrick aims at her. The two exchange fire and Cassidy falls back as blood splashes from her side. Nathan smashes Patrick's arm with the spade handle. He beats the criminal down with several vicious strikes, then tosses the handle aside and retrieves Patrick's gun. He presses it to the criminal's temple.
I forgot your name.
Patrick.
Patrick. Are you sure? I'm not like you. Are you sure?
Nathan reaches into the prone man's pocket and takes the gem pouch. Patrick sneers at him.
Was this really worth it?
What?
Your life.
Absolutely. It's mine.
A hint of a smile crosses Nathan's lips.
Then you go get it.
He tosses the gem pouch into the trench, then kicks Patrick in after it. The criminal lands beside Max's corpse. Planks and beams shore up the walls of the 6-foot-deep trench. Coffins sit stacked at the far end. Nathan spots Cassidy struggling to sit up. As he heads toward her, Patrick pulls a gun from Max's belt. Nathan dives behind a coffin crane as sparks fly from the gun. As the criminal cradles his injured arm, Nathan looks from the wood planks to the rusty gears to a dangling claw holding lumber over the trench. He yanks the lever as Patrick fires again. The lumber falls through the support beams bracing the walls of the trench, but Patrick dodges. The plank walls begin to crack and give. Dirt surges in. Patrick flees along the trench as a wave of black dirt surges behind him. He struggles to climb up the stacked coffins, but they tip over. Patrick looks up as the wave of earth caves in toward him. A charging subway train flashes in its place. Then the dirt folds over him, completely filling the trench. As the dust clears, Nathan stands solemnly over the still earth. Flashing police lights replace his sober face. Now, on the docks, dozens of officers move in slow motion. Nathan carries Jesse on his hip past the many parked police cars. The girl wears a fur-collared policeman's jacket and bounces slightly with each of her father's steps. Nathan slows as his face goes slack. A smile grows on Jesse's lips. Ahead of them, Aggie leans against a police car. She puts aside her crutches, smiles, and holds out her arms. Now, Nathan places Jesse in her mother's arms, and they all hug tightly. Nathan turns his head abruptly and stares off.
I'll be right back, sweetie.
Paramedics roll Detective Cassidy's gurney to an ambulance. Nathan steps up beside her.
How you holding up?
I've been better.
She smiles drowsily.
Thank you.
Elsewhere, Elizabeth stands with a blanket wrapped tightly around her slender form. She leans against a car. Bright lights glint off the water behind her. Her steamy breath dissipates in the night air, and she shivers. Her eyes focus on Nathan standing a few feet away, watching her. As he smiles and steps forward, she takes a shallow breath. Nathan steps close, hugs her, and kisses her forehead. She regards him.
Let's go.
With his arm wrapped around her, Nathan escorts Elizabeth back to his wife and daughter. Jesse spots her over her mother's shoulder and smiles. As they stride closer, Aggie notices them with tearful eyes. Nathan stands beside Elizabeth, and she waits uncertainly. Jesse reaches out her tiny hand. Elizabeth slowly wraps her fingers around Jesse's and looks up at the rescued girl. View rises above the dock. Steaming exhaust floats like fog from the parked vehicles, and a docked patrol boat's beaming searchlights thin into the dark night, fade to black.